Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment.
I'm Matt.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Carrie.
And this is the Game Junkie Podcast. Why it sounds a little bit fractured already, guys, it's because we're already having hijinks and we've barely started here. Welcome to the Game Junkies podcast. Yes, it is the three people we come to for a bit of like harder relief about gaming on a Saturday. Before we get to our intriguing top three list for the week, we are going to look at some news headlines. So, Kerry, do you have some news for us?
It's not news as such, but Animal Crossing has just been given another update.
Yes.
We've been given another Mayday maze. And from what I can gather, the wedding event is running again this year, but it's going to have all new things to go with it.
All right.
I've seen a few pictures of it. I won't say any spoilers here, because that's no fun.
Mm-hmm.
But there is some interesting stuff now.
There is some interesting stuff. I know that some people are very happy with some of the updates, and that have been over last year. Obviously, 31 million copies of the game has now sold worldwide since the pandemic started, which is ridiculous when you think about it's only been out on one console compared to things like GTA and other games which have been out on multiple consoles and multiple generations. It's fantastic. I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do, but some people are still not happy.
I can understand why. There's a few other things I'd like to see in the game too. Like, a lot of people want the return of Brewster, more Nook's Cranny upgrades and things like that. But maybe they're just coming in due time.
Mm. Obviously, the Mayday events are happening now, if you're listening to it as it goes out, until May 7th. Your Mayday ticket to do the single-use tickets, guys. So plan accordingly. Remember that, yeah? Obviously, International Museum Day back end of May. I did last year. I enjoyed it. Alex hasn't played Animal Crossing for a couple of months, I don't think. He's been busy fixing his car. But in fairness, it is a nice car. But he also does have a lot of love for Animal Crossing. So I dare say he will be popping back on.
I'll jump on it at some point. I think my biggest break I ever had from it was 6 months, according to Elvis. He told me I was gone for 6 months, and if I had a secret agent or something, he wouldn't tell anyone.
That's actually kind of cool. I've had a lot of villagers come and go. I recently, Penelope the mouse turned up, and then she was gone a week later. She didn't hang around at all, and now I've got Al, who is. Owl, I think he's the gorilla.
He's
on my island now. He used to be on Chris's island. He's now on mine. I gave him a bandana yesterday, and he's walking around with his yellow base paint. It's so cool. You get to dress them up in what you want, basically. It's fantastic. It's like when you can dress them up in maid outfits. It's great. I can't believe I was ever like not interested in Animal Crossing. I remember saying to Alex last January, I'm not bothered about this game at all. And Alex is absolutely right. I should have been excited about it. And now I look forward to seeing what they do. Obviously, wedding season is back for the whole month of June again. Apparently, Reese and Cyrus are going to have wedding photos every June. It's the only time we ever go to Harvey's Island. So.
I mean... I have a confession to make. I've never made it public because I made it for a friend, but I was using Harvey's Island for a while to kind of make a comic of a mock show similar to Parks and Recreation or The Office.
Oh, brilliant. That's brilliant. I love it.
It was so much fun. Unfortunately, a lot of the villagers that were in my comic have moved out since then, so it's like, I need a whole new cast.
I think the only time I've ever used that was, I think I made a D&D tavern with it, and I had Stitches singing at a mic.
I put all my villagers in outfits and made them play a game of D&D dressed up as their characters. I had a friend say to me once, they're not sure they'd ever have the time for a game like D&D. And I was like, oh, no. The time makes itself for you. The time makes itself for you.
We can vouch for that, seeing as we're involved in six in Dungeons and Junkies, and I all sort of see people outside of Game Junkies with their projects. And I think Alex has dabbled in other parts, and Kerry as well has dabbled in other areas of the outside of Dungeons and Junkies, to be fair. So to be fair, it takes time for sure, but it takes up time, but at the same time, you would always, if you like D&D, you'll find time for it.
Yeah, you always make time for it. I mean, it's why we play it weekly now.
Exactly.
It's kind of the embodiment of that. I just intended on becoming a casual fan, but then I just decided, hey, why not let it take over my entire life?
Says the person who has bought a lot of clacky clack math rocks.
Don't you clackety clack math rocks shame me.
Stares at my math rock for every single character I have. All colour coordinated.
And I will buy more, just you watch me.
Alex, I can't hurt anyone. The fact that you've got an actual D100 as a golf ball, brilliant.
Absolutely. I also have two D30s.
You do indeed. There's a lot of stuff. But as we were saying, there's a lot of stuff coming to Animal Crossing this month, which is great. I've got some more Nintendo news, actually, because I'm not sure if Alex has seen this, Kerry might have done, but there has been a rather big update to a game which has been out for many, many years now. What is the one game we always wanted multiplayer online but didn't have, Alex?
Super Mario Party. I think I've heard this.
Super Mario Party is now fully multiplayer online.
Because it had
where's
the main
my wallet?
Mode.
It's free update.
Oh. No, it had the main mode. Not the game, the update. Yeah, it had the main mode, which is the same as the DS game. And then when you did online, it was mini games.
You could play five, and that was it. This is the full board game. There's no new mini games or stuff like that, because mini games are the mini games that are in the game. But it took them a while to make it work, apparently, which is why it's taking this long. But it is shadow dropped out of nowhere this past Tuesday. I'm like, someone tell me that Alex knows about this, because I think we need to play this at some point on the channel.
I did see this, yeah. I think I still have Mario Party.
Me and Chris will have a copy as well, and it's going to be, this is the potential to, as we just saw, we said a few weeks ago, Mario Kart can break friendships, Mario Party can destroy them.
Yes. I know that. Admittedly, the last Mario Party game I played was the DS one, but they have ended in some tantrums.
This is going to potentially be amazing. And because the way Nintendo works, multiplayer, even when you play multiplayer Mario Party across the internet, you'll still be able to see what happens on the feed. So as soon as we get that sorted out for that sort of thing, guys, you'll be seeing that coming up on Game Junkie's plate for sure. Mario Party, Mario Kart, and a lot of Pokemon, Pearl and Diamond coming in the autumn as well. Alex is really looking forward to that.
I crave violence.
You do.
And abuse.
Bring me my Piplup.
I was also looking at one more bit of news. I'm not sure if Alex has seen this or not. Microsoft have followed suit this week, following Epic Games this week. Epic Games this week reduced their share from 30% to 12% from sales in the Steam store. Now, Steam and Apple, they take 30% of sales of games in their stores.
That's why the games are more. That's why games and transactions are more expensive on iPhones in Apple products than they are on Android.
Exactly. Microsoft have caused a major shakeup by reducing their cut from 30% to 12%. So the people who make the games get more money,
which is a really good thing, if you ask me.
Yeah. Microsoft have always been able to make the amount of where the amount of money they can afford to lose. For example, Nintendo and Sony simply don't have the cash to keep up with Game Pass.
And no,
Valve are going to be struggling to match Microsoft's latest offer.
You have to look at Microsoft's net worth to the likes of Sony's net worth, despite, that's being honest, especially in the UK, Sony being more popular on that side of things. But they can afford that sort of thing, can they?
I mean, Steam responded by reducing their cut to 25%, but only for the people who create over 10 million in revenue,
which is quite high.
Yeah, and to 20% for people who made over 50 million. I'm like, so what about Joe? What, for example, our friends at Branching Narrative, for example?
This is the gripe again for me. This is where indie games sort of get kicked in the face. The publishers just sort of get left in the dust. They don't give a shit.
Yeah, they could give away 30%. And
but the big billion-dollar companies,
like your Rockstars and your Take-Twos, are paying less out to these companies. That just sounds wrong. I dare say Chris will be talking about this more next week on his show.
Yeah, I'm going to have to listen to that one, because that winds me up, that does.
Yeah. Obviously, with the news that E3 is going for digital this year, we'll keep an eye on that when it comes around. Just over a month away, Alex, that is now, E3. So the three of us will obviously be keeping an eye on things and letting you know our thoughts when it happens right here on Game Junkies. Any more news, people?
Just that I'm annoyed about that, because the indie developers should be paying less.
We do agree with that. I mean, like I said, our friend at Branching Narrative, who did Death Trap Dungeon, for example, an amazing, amazing game, but they'd be paying but 30% of all their take on Steam would have been going to go to Valve, and I'm not entirely sure that's fair. But Microsoft have now lowered the boom, as it were. So it's kind of like, okay, after you people, Microsoft have just made things very, very interesting. Right. If we are all ready then, guys, we will move on to our top three list of the week. And our top three list for this week is the top three easiest boss battles in gaming. Now, this can be interpreted however you wish, but usually it's you found it easy. There are various ways you can interpret it, but who wants to go first? Alex is saying he wants to go first. So
I was shrugging like, don't know, whoever.
But you put your hand up. So after you, buddy.
Well, I went like that.
Okay. After you, buddy.
Okay, so my list is a bit funny because it's all wrapped up with final bosses rather than...
Hey, that works, buddy. That works, boss.
The first one is being Alduin from Skyrim.
Okay. Why is this easy?
It's hard to describe, really, because if you look in the in-game files, he has more resistances, more health than any other dragon in the game. Not so much when you fight him on the throat of the world, because that is a bit of a challenge. But when you get into... Oh, Christ, can you remember what... It was Sovngarde, that's it. When you fight him in Sovngarde with the other heroes, he is so easy. He doesn't do that much damage to you, not to what other dragons do when you start fighting, like, ancient dragons. it's just not a hard fight at all. It's I don't have much to describe this because I don't understand why he's so easy.
Is it more? Is it? And this is me trying to theorize why it feels easy. Is it because you've been like fighting those ancient dragons and things like that, and they're harder. But when it came to fighting him, you were just ready for more?
I don't even know, because his damage output isn't as high as the ancient dragons. His health is higher, but it doesn't seem like that. It doesn't... Maybe because there's four of you at that point, but his health seems to drop quite quickly. He's just a really big disappointment for a final boss. I would have rather just fought, like, an ancient dragon instead.
That's a fair comment.
I don't get it, though, because when you fought him on the Threat of the World, he was enough of a challenge. Like, it took... When I first fought him, it took me 2-3 tries to beat him. But you get to Sovngarde, and you wipe the floor with him. So, yeah. He was a piece of piss, and I'm disappointed in Skyrim for that. First, I need to try harder. Give him a fat man or something.
Kerry's laughing, so Kerry, go on.
Yeah.
What you got?
The one I picked, objectively speaking, I find it easy. It's the final boss in South Park, Fractured Butthole. You're essentially fighting a hand puppet.
You're fighting a hand puppet.
Essentially.
You're fighting Mr. Hat.
No. Not quite. No, you're fighting Mitch Corner.
Okay. Eric Cartman's thumb, basically.
It's his hand. He kind of pulls it. People listening to this can't see, but it's like that. It talks like that.
Oh. Oh, I see now. It's the sort of thing. I can't really say that. It's not PC. But yeah, go on.
The battle itself is, I find it easy. The actual fight is easy. The only thing that makes it not like a complete, what's the term I'm looking for?
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to find a nicer way of saying piece of piss, but I can't think of a nicer way. Is like the annoying little mechanic parts on it. It's like, oh no, this damage didn't count just because I've decided that. And things like that. But really the battle itself is just easy. When you take all that aside. It was a surprisingly disappointing final boss. It's very fitting for South Park because it's very South Park. That's probably the best way I can describe it. But as a final boss, it was just, it's like, oh, that's it.
Yeah,
the game is over.
Alex has just sent me a picture of Mitch Connor. And all I'll say is, if you're fighting a 10-year-old's hand, my God, that's embarrassing.
I mean, everybody in that game is a 10-year-old. So it's a fun game, though. It's probably one of my favourites. I'm quite biased because I love South Park.
Right. Thank you, Alex. Again, stop sending the picture of Mitch Connor. Stop. But I'm picking my first one. My first pick. There's actually footage of me playing this one as well, because it's up on Chris's YouTube channel right now. Go check out Chris Reactor. My first ever play of Nintendo 64's Mario 64. You fight King Bob-omb. Now, King Bob-omb, it is not exactly a hard boss to fight. You basically sneak up behind him and, well, toss him. Which sounds a bit untoward saying it like that, I suppose. But even if he gets hold of you, He throws you off, but you fall down one level and take like no damage. So I'm like, well, what is the point of what you've just done, sort of thing. So you just run back up to the top again, and then you repeat the process. If he catches you, he is literally the easiest boss I've ever fought in Mario. And some levels of Mario have got some relatively straightforward bosses, but this boss was probably the easiest one I've ever fought. Have you guys ever fought that one?
Yes, but so long ago that I can't remember it, if I'm honest.
Well, feel free to refresh yourself by checking out Chris's channel if you want to have a look at what that one is, guys, by all means. Yeah, it certainly wasn't one I was massively troubled by. And I was thinking, like, if it's that easy over time sort of thing, surely they get harder. Thankfully, they do get trickier, at least. Because heaven knows I wouldn't want an easy boss fight every single every level. What about you, Alex? What's your next pick?
Did you beat The Witcher 3? Just because it is a bit of a spoiler.
I have completed the story. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Then.
But I will say for anyone who hasn't finished The Witcher 3, skip if you haven't, then skip forward about 5 minutes. Okay.
And I mean, go finish the game. It's been out since like 2015.
Yeah, but it was re-released on the Switch, Alex. So.
There's still no excuse.
Yeah, but that is still needed. It's still a year and a half at this point.
That is true.
But in any case, if you haven't, it is spoiler time.
It's Eredin, the leader of the Wild Hunt.
Aha.
So, The Witcher 3, in my opinion, is notoriously hard. You're a modified human designed for hunting monsters that harm people. So that is literally the job of a witcher, is you're a psyched up human, so you're better than everyone else. And the monsters are still hard in that game. Like, they can very easily kill you. So you go through the story, you fight all these big hard bosses, you fight Imerith, which is Eredin's second in command, I believe. It's been a while since I played it.
Yeah, so right,
quite hard to remember. And he is relatively difficult. Like, it took me a couple tries to beat him. Just before you fight Eredin, you play a Syrian, fight his other lieutenant, which is not too hard, but harder than Eredin.
Yeah.
And when you get to Eredin, you absolutely wipe the floor with him. His attacks do enough damage that you don't want to keep getting hit. But they're easy to dodge. He doesn't have that much health. And the weapons you have at that point of the game do that much damage that in 10 minutes you beat him. And that's if you're taking it slow. If you want to speedrun it, you could probably beat him in 4 or 5 minutes. He's not difficult. And the fact he's the final boss of the main story, it's just pathetic how easy he is to beat. I mean, the boss you fight in the first DLC straight after is considerably harder, in my opinion. In that boss, I won't say it because Matt hasn't obviously got that far yet. Anyone who's played it will know that there shouldn't be a comparison between the two. But the boss straight after in the first DLC is surprisingly harder than Eredin ever can be. So he's disappointing. That's all I have to say.
It's never good if you have a boss that's disappointing.
No, like, it's the same as Alduin. You get this big lead up, like, he is the strongest, no one can beat him. And then you mop the floor with him. That's disappointing.
You do. It does feel that way when you. Let's take Star Wars as an example. Yeah, you've got the Death Star, the biggest killing machine in the entire universe.
Literally, a weapon designed to destroy planets with one shot.
Yeah, and it's taken down by a simple shot from one X-wing into a blast vent, which is an accuracy of 0.001%.
You know, which they could have put like a grated panel on, or a couple grated panels so nothing could fit down there.
Or as Drew Griffin said in Blue Harvest, can't you just put some plywood over it or something? Seriously, who designs that with a weak point?
And the better part is, who designs the second one with the same weak point?
Well, it's not a weak point. I would think of it the character flaw.
It's a character flaw.
As
the minus one in the intelligence.
Yes. As how Emmerich from Metal Gear said, it's not a weak point. It's a character flaw. People aren't complete without a character flaw, don't you think? Why would you intentionally put a weak point in it? I mean, yes, we don't put a weak point. Right, that's a good answer, Alex, absolutely. Gary, what is your second pick?
Every episode I've been here, would it be an episode that I've been here if I didn't mention Banjo-Tooie at least once?
Ooh, go on, we got...
It's a slightly chaotic answer. There is a giant anglerfish boss who, when you go and fight him, he's actually considerably hard.
Right.
For what the game is. But before you fight him, you have a chance to kind of transmute yourself into a submarine, which makes the whole fight a walk in the park, because you can spend the whole thing in first person, so you have amazing accuracy with shooting, you don't have to reload, you can swim really fast, and therefore it just kind of takes all the challenge out of the fight. And it's completely game legal too.
Jesus Christ. I can see why you had a chaotic answer here. I've got one that's equally awesome in a minute as well. I'm just hoping it's not quite as... Actually, I think it might be arguably more chaotic than yours, actually, Kerry.
Okay.
So I'm hoping it measures up to it. Oh, Alex. Alex, don't appear like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to put my phone on charge.
It's okay. Did you ever play banjo?
Yes. I had a bit of a thing a while back. I ended up... I had a new game. I can't remember what the game was, though. I think. What was it? I bought a brand new game. No, this is when I first got the Series X. I was like, I could play all these brand new games in 4K, 60 FPS. I saw Banjo-Tooie and then I ended up playing like 50 hours of it over like...
Alex, we bought Valhalla, and your
that was it, Valhalla.
And
that was it.
And out of the week, we did the show. Said, three games we'd rather be playing than Valhalla.
Yeah, that it was Valhalla, and I ended up playing like 50 hours of Banjo-Tooie,
which is good. I show
100% vouch for that. Fishboy, I'm going to call him.
Lord Wu Fak Fak. There's a fun story behind his name.
Lord Wu Dank Dank is very hard to fight if you're on using the bear and the bird, because aiming in that game, which I'm sure Kerry can vouch with me on this one, is stupid.
It makes stormtroopers look good at aiming.
Because basically it's locked to a point. So if you move the aim, if you let go of the trigger, it automatically centers again.
Which means if you go into first person to try and hit them a bit easier, the cursor is flying around like that.
Because it automatically centers the moment you let go of the trigger.
Yeah.
So aiming is just rubbish in Banjo-Tooie. Lord Wu Fak Fak is a nightmare to fight unless you're the submarine. If you're the submarine, you can absolutely wipe the floor with him.
My favourite part, though, is talking to him after you've killed him. He's like, go away, I'm dead, I have nothing for you.
Yeah, you can talk to him despite the fact he just tells you, go away, I'm dead.
Do not talk to me, I am dead.
I still think my ones would be equally chaotic, because this boss is an easy boss fight, but it's an easy boss fight twice.
Okay.
This is probably going to be a little bit before your time, Alex, and possibly even a bit before Kerry's. I apologise, but it's the case. We're going to go back a few years ago, all the way back to the days of the Mega Drive and the SNES, or the Genesis, as you call it in America, to a game called Earthworm Jim.
I haven't heard of it.
Earthworm Jim was so popular, it actually got its own TV series. Basically, it's an earthworm called Jim who's in a super suit who runs around basically fighting crime. He's a superhero, but he's a worm. Literally, he's a little worm head sticking out of the suit.
That's actually adorable.
It is, in a way. Well, anyway, he's got an arch rival called Bob the Killer Goldfish. And Bob wants to have the super suit that Jim is in so he can have legs as well as a nice, big, juicy worm soup to eat. Quote. Problem is that in the first game and the second game, Bob puts up not much of a fight, let's put it that way. In the first game, Jim turns up to where Bob is for the final boss fight, and Jim simply knocks the bowl he's in off the table and leaves him to flop around on the floor as he exits the level. That is literally the boss fight.
That is chaotic.
That is chaotic. In Earthworm Jim 2, in a parody of video game boss encounters, Bob is introduced with much drama in what appears to be some kind of pre-boss battle cutscene, including like a Mortal Kombat style fight sequence. Only have Jim pluck him from the bowl and eat him.
Oh.
There is the third game, but I haven't played Earthworm Jim 3D. That's enough, in my opinion, for it to be chaotic. Chaotically easy. Literally, you're fighting a goldfish in a bowl and you're in a super suit. That's the equivalent of having Superman going up against Lois Lane.
Youch.
Mm-hmm. Which actually is, ironically, the starting point for Injustice Gods Among Us. Right, so that's my second pick. Equally chaotic to Kerry. I think Kerry may actually just have edged me slightly, but I think I gave a run for money there. Why not call it a tie? Why not? It's very, very friendly. Speaking of friendly, Alex.
Okay, so I'd probably get told this isn't a fight, but it's classed as a boss fight, so I'm using it anyway.
We'll be judge of that. Go on.
Matt, I've told Kerry who this is, so I'll see if you know who this is. Who is 343 Guilty Spark?
This was one of my honorable mentions. I know very well. Yeah, this counts.
It literally takes 3 shots to kill him. You get given a massive laser rocket launcher, and it just takes 3 shots to kill him. His hitbox is the same size as the firing. Oh, what's the word I'm looking for? Basically, like the aim. So you fit exactly in your aim, and the whole hitbox hits. And all he can do is push you away.
For the benefit of the tape, Alex is talking about
Halo 3.
The monitor responsible for the.
The guy Halo. Who flies down and goes, oh, hello.
Me and Alex did a lot of cursing about him. We did our Halo playthrough. We made comment about it on our Halo reviews. And if he comes back a fucking again in the next Halo, we will be having words with you, 343.
I'm rooting for you, Skilty Bot. Guilty Bot. I'm rooting for him.
Sorry.
Words today.
It's all good.
Someone give me Microsoft Word.
But Well, he's going to need a little bit more of that. He's putting back together again after you blast him apart. He's going to need sweeping up in a dustpan.
To be fair, there's one on every single installation, so he could return.
Not the same one, though.
but he's got the same personality and the exact same voice.
Ah, lovely.
So the exact same job.
So he's a drone. Lovely.
He's technically, he will technically always survive longer than Cortana has.
Oh. Oof, too soon.
It's been years, shut up.
Too soon, Cortana!
Worst love story ever.
It's not the worst, it's the weirdest. There have been worse love stories. I can't think of them, but there have been worse. It's a weird one, but it's not the worst one.
Is this the time to bring out that really ancient, still a better love story than Twilight meme?
Yes. Yes, it is. And it's accurate. Right, so while Alex is rearranging his bedroom, it looks like, why don't you, Kerry, go ahead of your next pick?
Right. There's a... It's kind of a band of people, but I'm going to pick one in particular.
Go on.
You played Pokemon Emerald.
Emerald escaped me, but I'm sure I can catch myself up quite quickly.
Instead of getting to fight Steven, the decent champion, at the end, you get to fight Wallace, who was originally the 8th gym leader in Ruby and Sapphire. So right. You have a water-type Pokemon champion. Maybe it's just me, but I just feel like typed champions do not work. They make everything way too easy.
I have to agree. I mean, whenever you go to fight, like, the Elite Four, or the equivalent thereof, you always go with a mixture in your party, so you've got something to go up against them. You always should, because you never know who's going to be there. I mean, obviously, once or twice, you know who's going to be there, so you just take... I've known some people who just turn up with a Ditto before.
I've always wanted to do one of those Pokemon challenges where it's like, can I beat the whole game with just this one Pokemon? There's someone I watch on YouTube who does a lot of them, and they're always fun.
I like watching the ones where they actually try using the party that Ash used for each Pokemon gym. That's kind of a fun one to do. I'm guessing it was a case of just lightning.
Pretty much. I mean, I'm picking on Wallace just because water is a relatively easy type to counter.
Especially if you got Emerald, that's basically grass type, isn't it?
Pardon?
Emerald. I know it had like leaf green and
this was Ruby and Sapphire.
So it would be the equivalent thereof, I suppose. Okay.
Well, it was the lovely. I'm always scared I'm gonna pronounce the Rayquaza. I don't know.
Rayquaza, I call it.
I was right the first time.
Yeah.
It's like I'm picking on Wallace because water is a relatively easy type to counter when I'm fully aware that Gold and Silver had a Dragon type champion. Admittedly, he had Gyarados as well and Aerodactyl. But back then, there was literally only two things that could counter dragons, ice and other dragons, and both of them were really hard to come by.
Well, water type, it is the case of you can find electric type everywhere.
Electric grass type,
yeah.
Just hit it and it dies.
Mm-hmm. Just don't turn up. Just don't turn a rock type and you're fine, pretty much. Rock and fire, don't turn them until you're fine.
Bring Moira to the fight.
Absolutely. Nah, I see why that's perfectly valid. Easy Pokemon. I forgot about Pokemon battle. Obviously, they're really easy if you've got the right mons, always.
Yeah.
Which is why it's really funny when you go back to Pallet Town in the first game and then you have to walk to the from Pallet Town to the Pokemon Elite Four, and when you're doing it you have to go through the grass and you come up against a level 2 Rattata, and it's like, come at me. I've got a level 75 Pidgeot.
I will wreck your shit.
Ah, level 4 Nidoran.
Like, what? It's a case of... It's not anything... Those aren't even worth leveling against because Could you blast them so quickly? You get no XP for it.
So do you think they faint when you blast them with a higher level Pokemon, or do they just kind of disintegrate?
They disintegrate.
Given that you don't, even that you can't see their bodies in the grass, I'm gonna leave it up to your judgment, Kerry.
Have you ever used judgment on a level 2 Starly? I don't think there's much left.
Ah, yes, judgment.
For the benefit of a tape, Alex, tell people what judgment is.
Christ, ask me what move I used to use when I cheated Arceus into Pokemon Pearl. I can't.
It changes
type remember.
Depending on the plate, doesn't it?
I think it's 100 down. I think the power is 100, the accuracy is 100, and it changes type per what plate you use.
Yeah.
If it was D&D, it would be. It would probably be like 8d6 force damage.
It'd be like a slightly more predictable version of Chaos Bolt, I guess.
That's pretty predictable.
It'd be Gigantamax Witch Bolt.
Okay. Noted.
Witch Bolt.
Right.
It'd be Witch Bolt, but cooler.
Witch Bolt's pretty cool as well. Right.
Is it?
Said the man who never used it. Right. Okay.
Exactly.
Mixes great with salt water.
And avalanches and tsunamis.
Anyway, my final pick. Kerry went for a group of people, but also for one thing, so I'm going to do the same. Every single boss in the first 4 Sonic games. Now, read me because 7 hits and they die. Now, some were trickier than others, which is why I'm focusing on one in particular. And I'm going to go for the one in Sonic the Hedgehog 3 in the Carnival Night Zone. Now, bear in mind, I've discussed before how Carnival Night Zone was so difficult. I've discussed it before on another podcast with my brother and Chris. Chris couldn't believe how we got stuck, but it was infamously difficult level to get through. But once you get through that, you end up getting to, obviously, you have to face Dr. Robotnik at the end of every second act. That's the way it's always been. And this is the most disappointing fight as well, because it's painfully easy. The machine has 2 attacks, drops a green ball that hardly bounces or moves, and shoots lightning directly downwards. And then it slowly lowers down to pick the ball back up again and then go back up. You literally can avoid it by standing to the side and just waiting, jump and hit. It's even easier than the one on Sonic 1 in the Green Hill Zone. This is the easiest boss in the history of gaming to beat. And the only thing that goes in the favour a little bit is the fact that it's actually got a moving floor, but it's not a challenge. It is not a challenge at all. I struggled to find an easier one than this. And but bear in mind when you compare it to the fact of you've a couple of how difficult the puzzle to get through to it was. Bear in mind when that game came out, that was 6 years before GameFAQs was a thing. So there was no cheat books, there were no solutions. People had to assume they knew what they were doing, and it's an infamous level. Carnival Night Zone is a zone I never want to see again, and the boss being too easy is another reason. So yeah, those are my pick. Did anyone have any honorable mentions? Because I've got one to mention.
I've got one that kind of tags on to the end, because it's also a Sonic game.
Go on.
Did you play many of the Sonic, like the Game Boy Advance Sonic ones?
I didn't, but Chris did. So,
any of the bosses you could fight whilst being Cream the Rabbit, because you can fly and you can just yeet your weapons. You don't even need to touch the boss.
I will ask him for this later.
Basically any level you could do as Cream was a piece of piss. Because you can just like yeet a little chow at things and you don't have to touch it anything.
So basically Cream the Rabbit could let you cream a level, basically. Nice. Alex, have you got an honorable mention?
I have two honorable mentions. One of them's like talking shit about you. The boss of versing Matt at Mario Kart. You picture Matt as the boss, you win easily.
Okay.
But my actual one, though I can't remember his name, which is a good start. You remember the Pope in Assassin's Creed 2?
Yes, Alex, I do remember him, yes.
You know, the final boss, the big build-up, and all you have to do is punch him a few times.
The Borgia.
Yeah, that's him.
So with the buddy Borgia.
All you had to do was punch him a few times. All this time we build up, you destroyed my family, you did this. I'm finally going to take my revenge on you. 3 punches later, cutscene. You are dead now. Rest in peace.
It does seem risk it in pace. Absolutely. It does seem a little bit anticlimactic. But it does lead in quite nicely to the next game.
For one of the best games in the whole franchise, it has by far the most disappointing boss ever.
I will give you that one. So I've actually now got a second one because I'd forgotten about one. But so thank you for reminding me, Alex. I can take it in Metal Gear Solid 3, Snake Eater, where you have a sniping battle with the legendary sniper called The End. Now, if you don't do what I'm about to do, this is a really, really good sniper battle against a CPU. And it can be quite tense and quite exhilarating when you get the kill done. Or you can do what a lot of people do, and that is as soon as you've started the battle, you save the game, quit the game, advance the clock a week on the console, load the game again, and he's died of old age.
I've seen that. You told me this.
The easiest boss battle in gaming, probably. But I didn't want to put it on my list because it's technically a cheat. Because, there's no spirit in that, is there? There's no spirit in that at all. And my other pick is, if you've ever played Super Smash, there is one particular challenger that turns up. We can call that a boss, because obviously they challenge you, obviously. Behind me is a Pokemon which you guys know pretty well. He's yellow.
It's Wally.
No.
I'm joking.
It's Pikachu. But it's not Pikachu that I'm worried about. It's Pichu.
I mean, you should have pointed at Chikorita because they suck.
You take that back.
No.
I mean, Cyndaquil was my favourite of the three, but I've got a soft spot for Chikorita.
All three of those stars are cute. No, Pichu is the easiest boss battle ever. So much so, he's cute, adorable. But the fact matter is that when you use Pichu's electric damage, he damages himself.
Yeah,
they shot themselves. But also, they are the easiest to beat, so much so that they're officially classed by professional Smash players or Turkey Tournament players as being the worst character in the game. For me, so Pichu is a very easy boss, and I think we can class that, seeing as they are a challenger. So it's a boss battle. Yeah, easy to beat. So yeah, guys, let us know what you thought about all this. Any comments about them as well, and also feel free to at us with your lists, and we'll see how much your list compare to ours. Right, so guys, what have you been playing? Kerry's been hard at Animal Crossing, from all accounts.
Yes, I've been doing my best to finish my island so I can harass everyone from Game Junkies and Dungeon Junkies who has Animal Crossing to come and visit. Like, come and see my great island. I have a tavern.
I will ask you, Kerry.
Yeah?
Is Animal Crossing ever completed?
No, but I think you get to a certain point where you can just sit back and go, yeah, this is good enough. And then the next day, I hate everything.
I thought that as well. So much so that I've actually torn down the sweatshop now.
Go to the sweatshop.
I had a sweatshop. I tacked it on the side of the Nook's Cranny, and I was trying to put the Abels out of business.
That's amazing.
But after Caitlin threatened to kill me because of those, don't you dare upset those poor hedgehogs. It's such a dark story as well. It's such a dark story.
It's quite sad.
But yeah, so because of that, I haven't. And then I tore it down, and it's now my Easter garden. So I've torn it and put a garden instead now. So I put the sweatshop back in storage for now.
For now.
For now, yes. Until the Abels screw me on over on a price again. So with all the content coming, I'm going to create. I've got little bits around the island now. I've got like a Christmas garden. I've got an Easter garden. I've got a Halloween tower. You know, it's true. I've got an orchard. I've got a restaurant. I've got a full kitchen attached to the restaurant. I've got a pumpkin patch for Halloween. I've got a park. I've got a wrestling arena. And I've somehow still got a little bit of room for something else, but I haven't quite figured out what to do with that yet. And yeah, not too bad. It's a game you cannot get bored with. And yeah, Alex is somehow.
I think
I don't know. I found once I got to a certain point in building, I got bored. But that's just me.
So what have you been playing, Alex?
What have I been playing?
Besides D&D.
Skyrim, GTA. Bit of Animal Crossing, actually, as it happens.
Fair.
And Yu-Gi-Oh!
On the
Switch.
It's fun.
And, of course, D&D. Because every week we play D&D, and it is the best day ever.
As of the day of recording this, all I can say about D&D at the moment is screaming. Just lots and lots of screaming.
You haven't played the season finale to my campaign yet.
You haven't played the season finale to my campaign yet.
It's like my heart almost stopped for a moment on Tuesday.
That is how good.
Chad is as a DM.
Yeah.
We've all got our own different style for dungeon mastering for sure.
Chad is everyone dies, like, to the point where you're just terrified.
You never know what he's going to pull on you next, yes. But obviously, we're not putting spoilers here because that'll be out for a few weeks, obviously.
Yes. But as a DM, I both highly respect and genuinely fear Chad.
Yeah, absolutely. And not least because he's the boss.
I always forget. Well, he's technically the boss.
He is the boss of a network, yeah.
I have too many bosses. I need to drop some of my jobs.
Yeah. What have I been playing? I've been playing Hitman 3. The latest exclusive target is up on the channel. So this is the fourth one. I failed the first two. I passed the third one. And you can find out if I was successful or not right now on the Game Junkie Plays YouTube channel. Thank you to all of the support so far for it, guys. We appreciate it. I've also been getting the Pac-Man 99 because who's my Pac-Man? It's great. It's free. Tips 99 is still a big thing in this house as well. I've also been dabbling in Animal Crossing, obviously, but Among Us, now they've fixed the issues with the Switch version, and the airship map's on there now as well. It's epic. There will be footage of that when we get back together again playing that for sure. Alex is a little half mile on his face because he's sus as usual.
Oh, I screwed you lot over when I was the imposter. That's all I can remember, and that's why I had a smile.
You were very good, Alex. You were very good. I can't wait at some point to do a math game with everyone on the network.
Oh, that's going to be a nightmare.
It's going to be
so screwed when we play that one.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great.
Controversial opinion. I don't like being the imposter.
No. A lot of people hate being imposter, KHD, so you're not on your own list. A lot of people just can't handle it.
I just want to stand there and connect wires. It's comforting.
It, do you know what? It really, really is quite a fun thing to do.
Connecting wires is why hopefully no one comes behind me and breaks my neck.
Yeah, and then shoots you at the same time.
Yeah.
What else have I been playing? I've got to admit, I've been playing more F1. I'm getting ready for the new one to come out because, little side story, the 2021 season's already changing. We've been two track changes due to COVID this year already. They've announced that three of the tracks that have changed will be coming in DLC for free this year, which is great. But one of them, the Turkish Grand Prix, will not be coming, even though it was in last year, not for the game, but brought in for last year's season, and it's coming in this season. It's just too late, apparently, which is a shame. It's been 10 years since that track was in a Codemasters game. But I'll be getting it in July, and I dare say Alex will actually give it a chance to play it, seeing as how he ain't got to pay for it. It's always a good thing. Yeah, we've been all sorts of lovely games we've been playing, and of course, been playing a lot of D&D with these two lovely people, which is always fun. D&D is a big part of my life now. And for last year, I wouldn't have got through without you guys.
Aww.
Alex has just disappeared from the call.
Yeah, he passed out from shock.
I mean, to be fair, D&D has really been a lifesaver for these past 12 months. And it's not even a game anymore, it's a lifestyle now.
Hey, to be fair, a lot of people for a long time said D&D was just for nerds. The nerds run the world now.
I have to admit, before I got into D&D, it was a game I always wanted to start playing, but it was just like, oh God, so many rules in maths and dice. But it's actually quite simple when you get there.
It's quite straightforward, basically. You score.
Dyslexic dyscalculia, but I still play D&D. I just go shiny math rocks. It's probably that number.
And if in doubt, talk to a human calculator.
It's literally the reason I bought a calculator off of Amazon for £3.99.
I mean,
so I could play D&D.
If you get that stuck, just read out the numbers and Caitlin will wrap them up for you.
Yeah, the human calculator can do it literally in seconds. In fact, Caitlin, and it is true, is the only person at a live Ock Venture show to be given inspiration from the DM for actually doing math faster than the DM could do it on the stage.
I tell you what, when they mentioned that was them, I laughed so much because I remember when you told me to start watching Ock Venture, and I was listening to that and I heard someone on the YouTube video shout it out. I did not realise that was Caitlin.
Yeah, it was Caitlin, yeah. Yeah, and you guys should be, if you go and support Caitlin over on Armine Games, their D&D channel is up there as well. Over 100 listeners they've had for theirs now, so thank you for the support. Think of they're independent, we really appreciate all the support they're getting.
Go listen to their trauma that they induce us with.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Shambles is a huge hit.
Welcome to Dyson Suffering.
And he's a huge dick.
Caitlin and I have been trying to rebrand Dungeon Junkies as Dyson Suffering for a while. It's not working.
Shambles is not a dick. Shambles is just misguided.
Shambles, three looks at a sign. Shambles is a dick. It's a good thing I can't read because I don't know what that says.
I was like, this sign won't stop me because I can't read.
Not that bad. He means well. He means.
Oh my god, there's some days where I just want to punch him in the face.
You got to admit, you love Shambles, Alex.
I just hope Shambles has his battle cap on next time.
Not ready for that.
As of recording this, I've asked Caitlin twice now on a scale of 1 to TPK, how fucked are we? But I never get a straight answer, which has me worried.
An 8.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I think it's time for us to do our spiel and get out of here.
Because we have given out way too many spoilers.
Yeah.
For our future episodes.
We spoil anything.
We're no spoilers, Alex. You just said how much fun we've had, lovely teaser.
You could put those words into spoilers if you really give it some thought, or when you come to listen to the episodes.
Right.
I wouldn't say so.
It's all good though. So, Kerry, where can people get in touch with you? Where should the people be looking for artwork as well?
Right, well, I am Shira Beans on Twitter. I say this every time, I don't really post much because I don't really know what to post, but I enjoy lurking. And also, I get to supervise the Dungeon Junkies art Instagram, which admittedly has been on a very small hiatus as of recording this, but I will get back to uploading on there soon, where you get to see the art from... I mean, I'm pretty sure at this point everyone is an artist in our group of some form or another. Alex is shaking his head at me.
I'm not an artist.
I mean, art doesn't necessarily have to be drawing. It can be words.
And to be fair, Alex, your chibi art is fantastic.
I am a bit of a limerick myself. Willis, what a prick.
It's not quite a limerick, but very good.
Alex, how can people get in touch with you?
Okay, you can find me at Spiderbread UK. You can find our main show at Game Junkies Pod, and you can find the ever-growing collection of madness and D&D content at Dungeon Junkies.
You can indeed. You can find me at Matt.UK. Don't forget to check out Chris next week, of course, for Chris Talks Games with 51st episode. He'll be probably doing some more on his westernization of Japanese characters. Last episode was fantastic, and one before it was equally good. Do check it out. And of course, he's also got his D&D one shot coming up very soon through Dungeons and Junkies, where we all sat down and were put through torture by him. And little spoiler, he did so well, he's coming back in August for another one. So we will be back in 2 weeks' time. So from me, I'm Matt.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Kerry.
We are the Dungeon Junkies. Yeah! No,
we're not. Are the Game Junkies, and we're out of here because Matt can't do his job properly. Goodbye.
We are 50% of Dungeon Junkies.
Good afternoon, good evening. Goodbye.
We're out of here. That was good.
This podcast is a Matt Attack production for Visionaries Global Media.